My name is Zed Goldberg, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Reese Bowens. Reese, welcome to KBOON. Welcome to Portland.
Thanks very much, Ed. It's good to be here.
Let me read a little bit about you here. Reese Bowens was born and grew up in England and went to school and college in England, Austria, and Germany. After completing her degree, Reese went to work with the BBC in London. Can you do the BBC voice?
I can indeed. This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Thank you. I like that. And you found your niche in the drama department. Mm-hmm. I always say if you find your niche, you should scratch it. Working on so many fine plays inspired you to write your own. Dandelion Hours was your first published play. Actually, it was produced.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah,
but now you live in San Francisco or thereabouts.
Marin County, just
in
north.
Marin County. Yeah, yeah. And you've been there since 1966. So you were there then.
I was in the summer of love sort of time. Yes.
Yeah. Did you participate?
No, not really. No.
Alas. Okay. You've written children's books. Mm-hmm. You've written young adult books, adult historical romances, and sagas.
Yes.
And now you're doing mysteries. Why did you start writing mysteries?
I got to a stage when I felt I'd said everything I wanted to for teenagers. You know, I'd done a breaking up and getting together again and going to proms and not going to proms. And finally, I thought, why am I not writing what I like to read? I've always been a huge mystery fan. It's always been the things I've read. And what really hooked me, I think, was when I discovered Tony Hillerman. Until then, I'd read mysteries as the puzzle. And when I read Tony Hillerman, he takes you to another time and place. And it was just so fascinating to me that he can look into the insights into the Navajo, etc. And I thought, that's what I want to write. So I started, and the first mysteries I wrote were set in Wales. That's my mother's country. And I'd spent a lot of time there as a child. And the Welsh are very different from the English. So it was great to sort of bring out the Welsh characteristics and things in a book. And so the first mysteries I wrote were set there about a Welsh policeman. And then after that, I moved on to I wanted to write a feisty first-person female. And I visited Ellis Island. And Ellis Island was completely moving for me. I had no idea it was going to be like that. I thought it was one of those places you know about and you've read about it. When I got there, I could just feel all the emotion that was there. And I thought, I have to put this in a book.
Listen, I've been remiss because I haven't given the title of your book. It's called Royal Flush.
Yes.
That's the title.
Yeah.
Reese Bowens, first name spelled R-H-Y-S.
Yes.
B-O-W-E-N.
Yes.
I've been saying Bowens. It's actually Bowen. And yeah. Berkeley Prime Crime is the publisher.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you been to Angel Island in California?
I have, yes. Yeah.
That's the roughly
it is similar for the Chinese people. It was their immigration station. Yeah.
A lot rougher for them, though, for my ancestors that came through Ellis. This book is set in the 1930s in England and Scotland.
Yes.
And your character, who I'll call Georgie, you can give her whole name if you want to.
Yes. She's really Lady Victoria Georgiana Charlotte Eugenie, and she's 34th in line to the throne, and she's completely penniless.
I have that right there, number 34.
Yeah.
And even being 34th in line to the throne, she has privileges ascribed to her at birth that most English will never understand. Oh, they understand it, but they'll never attain to.
No, I mean, that's why I wanted her in a difficult situation, you know, in that she can't go and get a job at Woolworths, even if there were jobs available. It's the Great Depression. So she has to behave like a member of royalty, but without being given the means to do so. She's too far from the throne to get any sort of government stipend. And really, the only thing open to her is going to be a companion to a dreadful elderly relative, or to marrying into one of the royal houses of Europe and thus cementing some ties somewhere.
Let me start with this. The idea of impoverished nobility is we hear about this. This is something which mystifies us in this country. I mean, if you're nobility, then you should have some money, right? But in fact, there's a lot of impoverished nobility.
Well, especially in England, after they started implementing death duties, you know, the estate taxes on an estate. And every time someone dies, then they assess the value of that estate in the land, and then they make you pay duties on it. So these poor people are hit with several millions. Well, they don't have the cash. You know, they're land rich, cash poor, and they have to sell off part of the estate to pay those duties. And there are plenty of people. These days, they do things to raise money to keep their estates going.
Taking
tourists, have a zoo on the estate, a fun fair, a weapons museum, whatever will bring in some people. And, you know, that's what you have to do. When you think those houses were built to be run by teams of servants, And these days you can't afford teams of servants, so you want to keep them going at all. And they're impossible to heat. They're impossible to do anything with. They're always needing renovation. So it's a very expensive business to keep one. And yet if they've been in the family since 1700, you want to keep it.
No indoor plumbing, damp, cold. Feel every breeze that comes through. And in Scotland, that's quite considerable.
They were definitely howling gales, yeah.
And fireplaces that are big enough to roast an entire stag in. But which take an enormous amount of wood just to keep one room warm.
Yeah, yeah. My sister-in-law actually has a fireplace like that. She has a fireplace that about four people can stand in.
Hmm? Yeah. I hope not while the fire's
going. Not while the fire's going, no. Okay.
Besides being a mystery, this is what I would call a satire of manners, for want of a better terminology.
I think so. I mean, it's partly, I think, comedy of manners, and I think partly just lighthearted spoof, too. It is P.G. Woodhouse, really, with bodies.
I have that written down. Woodhouse, yes. Yes, it's very Woodhouse-y. Yeah. The common people are smarter and more level-headed, and the higher you go up the chain, it seems the more twit-like you become.
Well, I mean, that's fairly true, you know.
Too much inbreeding, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you have to realize that even today, the British aristocracy, they really think that God made them and then he rested, and that everybody else is on earth for their purposes. And they do say the silliest things. And I married into one of these families, so I can sit there and listen to people say ridiculous things and think, oh, that will sound good in the book. You know, they say things like, well, when you go abroad, you know, nobody knows how to make a decent cup of tea. That's why they're all so pasty-faced, you know.
You know, I've heard that. can't you make a good cup of tea in this country? What's wrong with Lipton's? Everything is wrong with it. We just don't know. We don't care much. The thing about Georgia is that she's pretty grounded because she has a side of her family which is not from the aristocracy.
Yes.
And she has a mother who's a former actress, film star.
Yes.
And is a bit flighty. Can we say that?
Well, I think, yes, she's, more than flighty. I think she's what in those days they termed a bolter. She fled from her first husband and then has gone to a series of men ever since, you know, and putting on more makeup to try and keep her youthful looks as she gets older. But she's amassed large amounts of money doing this. She always goes to rich men. Rich and famous and dangerous is what the men she goes to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This reminds me of that Rodgers and Hart song about To Keep My Love Alive, about a serial widow.
A
serial black widow. She keeps killing off her lovers.
Well, when
this book starts, Georgie is destitute and has no idea what to do for a job because there are no jobs because as you say, it's the Depression.
Yeah.
So she thinks what a great idea would be to have young ladies who would escort people to restaurants and sit there and be witty and charming and just be a kind of a date. How would you call it? Just a temporary date.
Yes, an attractive companion.
Precisely. Yeah. And, oh, yeah, you wrote it, of course. but it's misconstrued. Can you tell us about that?
Well, her friend Belinda, she has a very naughty friend who seems to always land on her feet. And Belinda asks her to take her place with a visiting American gentleman who's come to London on business, knows nobody, and hates to dine alone. And so all Belinda is going to do is go to have dinner with him. So a light bulb goes off in Georgie's head. And she thinks, well, this is wonderful. I could actually set up a service to provide these lovely companions for people. So the mistake she makes is that in her advertisement, she uses the word escort service and high-class girls. And Georgie's rather naive. She's grown up, you know, in a very sheltered environment. So when she's summoned on her first date, it's in a sleazier place than she expected. And then she realizes fairly quickly that the man has completely the wrong idea about what services she's going to provide.
So the term escort service, men escort service, even.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes, ago. I'm yeah. sure. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
that's actually the whole thing is very funny. But this leads to her being approached by one of the secret services. I don't want to give too much of the book away.
No, no. That's
So tell us what happens with the...
To start with, she's told she's going to be sent back to Scotland rapidly before the press can get wind of this and put a headline that says the tart with the tiara.
Which seems so right.
Yeah. And so she thinks she's being shipped back to Scotland in disgrace until a man comes into her compartment on the train and he tells her that somebody is trying to kill off the heirs to the throne, make it look like accidents. And what's more, it seems to be an insider. He says it's one of your lot. And so he wants her to be the eyes and ears on the spot.
And she accepts not willingly.
Not
but,
willingly, yeah, but because, yeah. Yeah, be,
and she needs to go to Scotland because her poor brother Binky
yes.
has been literally caught in a trap.
He
and
has, yeah.
His leg has nearly been severed, mm-hmm. and he's recovering in great pain in yeah. the family castle at Runoch.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And his dreadful wife, Fig, is there with him.
Yes.
But Fig and Binky have troubles that go beyond yes. just his poor leg.
Well, they do, because Fig is normally Georgiana's arch enemy. I mean, she can't stand Georgiana, and likewise. And when she gets there this time, she's welcomed with open arms by Fig, who says, "Thank God you've come." And it turns out that the house is full of Americans, including the infamous Mrs. Simpson, because the Prince of Wales is nearby with his parents at Balmoral. And obviously she wasn't welcome there, so she's staying here to be within easy reach of him.
Wallace Warfield Simpson.
That's the, right, yeah.
Talk about a bolter, eh?
yeah.
This is a woman born in Baltimore.
Yes.
Who kept a... what I forget what the exact term is, but she's a bounder, among other things.
Yeah.
She's just marrying up. She keeps marrying
yeah.
up. That's the phrase.
Well, and the time I'm writing about, the Prince of Wales has only recently met her, and she still has a husband in tow. And what's more, he's taken around for respectability. So this poor man goes to all these house parties, and then he's sent off to play billiards while she dallies with the Prince of Wales.
Mm-hmm. They were eventually to become the Duke and Duchess of Windsor.
They were, yeah.
Reprehensible a couple, as certainly yeah. on this side of the pond, they were treated with deference, but a lot of us didn't like them much.
Well, I think they were loathed in England. The annoying thing was that he was very popular to start with. He was a dashing prince. He cared about the people. He would have made in many ways a lovely king, but he was weak, and he was definitely under her thumb, and she thought she could be queen. That's what I think is so strange.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when he stepped down to marry her, to be with the woman I love, as he said it, I think that was the greatest thing that happened to England, because Winston Churchill said we should erect a statue to Mrs. Simpson, because otherwise he would have welcomed Hitler with open arms.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. They were pro-fascist.
Yeah, they were. They in fact, they went to whatever Hitler's place was in South Germany.
Berchtesgaden,
yeah. Went there, you know, in like 1938 or so.
With Oswald Mosley and the Mitford girls.
They did, yeah. I mean, yeah. They thought he was wonderful.
Yeah. Less said about that, the better.
Yeah,
I remember, I grew up in the 40s. I was a child in the 40s.
Yeah.
There was something everybody knew. Everybody knew Lou Gehrig's speech when he retired from baseball.
Yeah.
Everybody knew the Day of Infamy speech. But
yeah.
Everybody knew the We Will Fight Them on the Beaches
yeah.
speech. And everybody knew the abdication speech.
Yes, yeah.
That's just something that was a part of the culture.
Yeah. It's interesting because I'm now at the end of 1932. And so if the series continues, we're becoming closer and closer to the gathering storm ahead and who's on which side. And it'd be some interest. Because I think several English aristocrats were on the wrong side then. They had ties to Germany, and they thought that Hitler could restore order to Europe. And, you know, who knows?
Well, the royal family were Hanoverian.
They were, yes, yeah.
I'd like to remind our listeners, I'm speaking with Rhys Bowen. And Rhys is the author of Royal Flush, published by Berkeley Prime Crime. What's really wonderful about the castle at Renoch
mm-hmm.
and the groups of visitors, there are hideous Americans,
mm-hmm.
there are beastly English, and then there are the Scots themselves. And then there's
yeah.
the Eurotrash floating around. Well, I don't know if that word was common then, but it's
no.
certainly common now.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. What, they were all detestable in one way or another.
Yeah, they're fun to write about, the detestable bit.
And it's hard to, I mean, they all kind of cordially loathed one another.
Yes, yes.
And all for the right reasons, because they were all right about each other.
Yes. Well, I think the fun thing with these people is that they all have their own ideas about what is right. You know, poor Fig is saying, these Americans, they always want to take baths and showers. Nobody can be that dirty, you know. And then the Americans think it's silly that they can't play cards in the morning room because it's after lunch. And, you know, so everybody has their own little set of rules and they don't want to go beyond them.
Do you know Ruth Rendell?
I do, yes.
One of the things about her, she writes wonderful mysteries, and
yes.
they're all psychological, and everybody's psychology starts out screwed up, and in some way it's screwed up even further by the English class system.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, if you haven't been born into it, it kind of could twist you out of shape.
Yeah, I think the amazing thing is that it's still in place now. When you think we've gone through two world wars, we've gone through every sort of revolution, we're part of the EU, the technology age.
The 60s.
Yeah, everything has gone through, and yet it's still pretty much in place. And English people, a lot of English people, still judge someone by how they talk, They look at their tie to see if it's a school tie they recognize. Where did you go to school? And they judge by that. And the upper class still thinks of themselves as apart and superior. I was at a cocktail party in the Cotswolds, which is a very snobby area. And the woman said to her guests, "My dears, you will never guess who's brought that house across the valley." And everybody leaned closer and said, "Oh, do tell." And she said, "My dears, he's a grocer." And everybody went, "Oh." And the amazing thing is, if he'd owned Safeway, he was still a grocer.
That's right. Was it Mr. Sainsbury?
I mean, it could have been. But I mean, the fact is, he would never be one of us.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's fun to write about that. I think.
That's the trouble when the rise of the bourgeoisie.
Yeah.
It set the nobility on their ear. Yeah. These are all very funny. The occasional actual vicious remark comes from you, but from the characters.
Oh, so, yes, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things that Georgie does is try to come up with a plan to get rid of the Americans.
Yes.
And it involves, among the things, Fergus the Pipes and the white lady of Rannoch, who sounds like a character out of Wilkie Collins.
Yes.
Talk about this plot to get rid of the Americans.
Well, Georgie says to her sister-in-law, "Well, we must make it so that they want to go." And Fig says, "Dare we do that?" And she says, "Well, we'll only go our own traditions. We'll institute the piper at dawn again. You know, we pipe in the day at 6 o'clock in the morning. So you imagine you're asleep, and there are bagpipes outside your door at 6 o'clock." And then they mention the fact that the white lady of Rannoch does in fact haunt the corridors of the house, moaning. And in fact, one of them does see her. And then they decide that they have to serve haggis for dinner. And those of you who don't know haggis is that it's a sheep's stomach that's boiled for 24 hours, and then it's stuffed with all the other pieces of offal from the sheep.
And oatmeal,
yes. And then it's boiled again for another 24 hours, and then it's eaten. And then also they mention that there's a monster in the loch just outside the castle. So they're trying to come up with every... And the funny thing is that all these things sort of come to pass, don't they?
Yes. Yeah. One of the things I found is very funny is that the Americans, not knowing what haggis really was, are taken out on a haggis hunt.
Yes.
Told it's a little creature that looks like the Disney Tasmanian devil.
Yeah, that's right.
And it bites your ankles.
Yeah, awful fierce. They go for your ankles, yeah.